Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast, your divisional round preview. This podcast, of course, brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. I'm your host, John McCackney, joined as always by Mario Puig. Let's get into the action. All right, Mario, so we got a loaded slate of games here to carry us through this weekend. We got four really good ones. We weren't exactly treated to thrilling football in a lot of cases last weekend, but here's hoping that this weekend delivers on the hype. We're going to kind of run through all four games, break them all down in depth. We're going to get into some of the betting angles for it, and we're also going to kind of go through it in under the framework of DraftKings for their four-game contest, kind of pick and choose guys, stacks, values that we like from each and every game. But Mario, let's fire this off, starting off on the Saturday afternoon game, Cincinnati going to Tennessee. Weather doesn't look like it's going to be an issue there. 39 degrees during the day, dipping down to 23 at night. Sun will set around halftime of that game. The line opened at Cincinnati +3, moved to +4, has mostly settled in at Bengals +3.5. Your thoughts on this game, especially in light of Derrick Henry's impending return potentially, in addition to, you know, how the Bengals were able to survive a weekend ago?
Well, last weekend, I think we can just say the Raiders, you know, benefited from expanded playoffs, weren't really the kind of team that belongs advancing from the wild card round. So I don't know if there's much to take from it. The Bengals did whip them basically both times this year. So that's interesting. And it's good for the Bengals to be, you know, getting hot this time of the year. And the couple weeks before the regular season ended, they were seemingly looking their best. And that's what you'd prefer to see. You'd rather start slow, get hot now than the other way around. So that's all good. What I have trouble figuring out is how good, I guess, the Titans are. Like, they're not as good as their seeding, but they might still be pretty dangerous. And in football, it's, you know, one game playoff is a lot different than, you know, a series. And in a one game scenario, especially if you get a shorter game than usual or just a few wacky things happen, it's like the one game danger of a team like the Titans is pretty high, even if they're not, you know, a team that you project to be better than like 10-6 or 11-6 for nowadays, something like that. They also have had a lot of kind of like one-off ambush game plan things from Mike Vrabel that have caught teams by surprise. And in the playoffs especially, that's all it really takes, is like one or two drives getting screwed up from your winning formula. And sometimes it's not a given that you can adjust in time.
I'm just thinking of the Baltimore game from 2 years ago. I mean,
it's like a lot of teams. It's like Baltimore. They seem to save all their tricks for those. Like, maybe the reason they lose against these crap teams is because Vrabel literally just does not put as much thought into the game. Like, maybe he tries to come up with these, you know, this bag of tricks, and he tries to budget it over the course of a year and not use them up against, you know, insignificant opponents or something like that. I don't know what else would explain it. I guess it all could be random, but it seems like random suits them. You know, it doesn't seem like this kind of style really works against them that much. When they get beat, it's in a competitive significant situation. You know, it's more like they get beat because the team they went against was better. So in any case, I think, you know, Burrow getting hot the way he has and Chase, especially getting going again after kind of like a cool 6 to 8 weeks there after that really hot start. That's a formula that can work here. And I guess Janoris Jenkins is out for the Titans, so that has to make it a little easier yet. Although I don't think he can really defend either of those guys being 5'9", especially not Higgins. So we'll see. The Titans can't win on defense in the secondary, especially they can't win by like the basis of talent. You know, it's like they need the pass rush to intervene. They need Jeff Simmons to get to Burrow and make it so that Chase doesn't have, you know, 4 or 5 seconds to run those downfield routes. And I don't know how likely any of that might be. I don't want to bet against Vrabel, and especially when he has so many kind of, it's almost like Belichickian, I guess you could say, the way that, you know, you'd see certain tape tendencies, usage personnel tendencies from the Patriots all year. Then they get, I remember that Chargers playoffs game from a few years ago, especially, is like they just came out with this
where they just bashed them.
Yeah, they just bashed them to bits with this loadout of personnel and usage tendencies that they didn't really show all year. So Vrabel does stuff like that, and you know, being involved with the defense, it's probably sooner there that he comes up with it than on offense. But yeah, they have to kind of like overachieve somehow is the thing, because the Bengals defense isn't crap on the other side, and their pass rush is definitely good enough to give Tannehill a lot of trouble. If
yeah, I like the exposed. Hubbard and Hendrickson duo off the edge is Ogun, pretty nice.
Ogunjobi and BJ Hill have been really disruptive inside too.
So yeah, there's a lot to like from that front seven. Going back to the Bengals side of it. So obviously they get the monkey off their back last weekend, but you know, you mentioned T. Higgins and the problems that he might be able to cause that this Tennessee secondary. He plays 54 snaps last week, but he did pick up that midweek injury. Did he look a little bit off to you? I mean, obviously one catch on 4 targets for 10 yards is not something that we're expecting again necessarily, but do you have some concern that the Bengals might need to find a legitimate second option outside of Chase if Higgins isn't 100%?
I don't know. It was tough to tell, especially early on in that game. It seemed like Chase was just kind of eating them up. And when Chase is A, probably already like the biggest concern of the defense, and B, succeeding, like it was something like 4 catches in a row, I feel like he had on that first drive. And it's like, that just means like Chase has something on the defense right now. Like the Bengals got something that the defense hasn't figured out how to stop. And they're taking that, and they're going to take it no matter what everybody else is doing on the field. Cause like, I don't remember what the numbers were. It was like 60 yards or something. I feel like in the first, I don't know, like 12 snaps for Chase, something like that. So Higgins would have had to have been playing just out of his mind to get targets instead of the guy producing on that level. You know, it would have been a different thing if they were kind of sputtering for a while and, you know, Chase gets shut down for a couple plays and they go to Higgins on the third and he doesn't come up with the catch. Like that would have been a little different than them doing whatever they wanted. And incidentally, not really needing Higgins to do that. So he's not on the injury report, especially this week. So I think if the Titans do manage to shut down Chase, then, yeah, the Bengals either stop on offense or Higgins gets going. And the second seems a lot more likely to me.
And then, you know, following up on that, you know, if the, you know, the pass rush is getting home or whatever for Tennessee or those receivers aren't getting open, how big of a factor do you think Joe Mixon can be in this game?
Yeah, it's he can always be a factor, like in the workload volume sense and like tiring out the defense sense. Like that was, I guess that first Raiders game was a lot like that, where he had 30 carries and it was only like 4.1 yards per carry. He wasn't making any big plays, but he did slowly erode the defense over the course of that game. And they kind of blew the Raiders away in the fourth quarter. That could be something that they use here, especially if the pass rush is getting to Burrow. But the Titans' run defense is pretty good, so it doesn't seem likely that they'll just sort of get whooped. You know, it's like they'll need to get choked out over the course of the game, and it's possible. But you need to kind of, maybe you don't need to get the better offense than the other team specifically, but you do need to give your defense enough rest, and you need to develop sort of like a field position advantage over the course of the game that gives you the luxury of leaning on those short, you know, clock eating run plays that otherwise might be needed to convert to points faster, depending on what the score is.
Okay. So, you know, when it comes to Mixon, like you said, if the Bengals do kind of dictate that type of scenario, Mixon can obviously execute in those type of situations.
It's a pretty tough matchup, so I think he might be like touchdown dependent, or he needs to get to that 20 carries kind of mark to wear down the defense, basically.
Got it. Okay. All right. That checks out. Looking at this Tennessee offense a little bit further, what are your expectations when it comes to Derrick Henry? He checks in as, you know, rightfully the most or highest salaried running back on the board this week. I think in general, my lineup builds are going to go a little bit cheaper on running backs, try to pay up a little bit at receiver, at tight end, that sort of thing. So Henry, not necessarily on my radar this weekend, but I do feel like we're going to see a lower roster percentage for Henry than we normally would, especially on a small slate, just because the uncertainty coming off of that injury. But what are your thoughts on, you know, his usage coming back here? Presumably.
I really have no idea. I mean, I don't know why we would take this injury that's normally regarded as, you know, not just a season ender, but something that casts some amount of concern over the remaining career of a running back, and especially one as big and, you know, power oriented as Henry, someone who generates such freakish force with his legs and his feet. Seems like it would be kind of aggressive to me, and yet I guess that's exactly what the Rams did with Cam Akers, and we'll see. I mean, I even Jerry Rice, when he returned from that ACL tear in like 10 weeks or whatever, that one year, he didn't break his patella immediately. Like, he had a pretty good game and caught a touchdown pass, and then the structural weakness in his knee mattered eventually, I really hope the science just turns out to be futuristic and Akers' genetics freakish, and certainly the same with Henry. But I do worry about both players paying some sort of price for these teams. You know, maybe this isn't rushing back for the new modern medicine. I have no idea. But they're both the first of their types, and all the other types of these injuries were just, you cannot do this. So we'll see. I don't really know. It seems kind of aggressive to me, but I basically didn't expect Akers to play this much either.
Right. And Akers, I thought, looked good for
yeah, he looked better than he did his like rookie year.
It was unbelievable to watch on Monday night. So let's go ahead, zoom out. Any DFS plays that you're going to be targeting from this particular matchup?
Well, I guess I'm probably not the type to go with Henry, or at least 7,500 strikes me as a bit much. Maybe the ownership projects so lowly that I should reconsider that, but 7,500 to me seems like a lot of risk, and the reward of him, what is it? What does that even look like? Do we really think that he is both beating this timetable, and also it's a different type of injury, like tissue injury? I don't know if Achilles isn't good, obviously, in Akers' case, but this might be a more serious injury for Henry to return from than what Akers' Achilles.
Doesn't he have a plate in his foot or something?
Probably. I mean, like, I don't know. It's crazy. But I'm still, in any case, thinking like, even if he plays and even if he gets some, you know, even if it's some substantial workload that he's getting, I don't see him being like a leading scorer at running back by such a margin that it's worth taking on all the risk and at the highest price. So this could just be fish brain laying itself out for everybody to see the wrong way to look at it. But that is how I see that one. And aside from that, AJ Brown is a very different case. Like at 6,200, granted the chalk's probably going to be pretty heavy there, but I can't stay away from that. That to me is the free space, if there is one, and the free space is both, you know, chalky and also oftentimes necessary to compete.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to fall behind the field. AJ Brown, obviously capable of totally taking over a game, and, you know, you don't really have that many other receivers that project similarly this weekend, especially at a relative discount. I think I am going to explore a Burrow Chase mini stack at the very least.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The Bengals side, I was just going through the Titans, but yeah, the Bengals side, it's like everybody pretty much.
Yeah. I even like Uzama.
Yeah. He's a really good player. I don't know if they usually have room for him to do stuff like he did last week, but he's definitely good.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to save a little bit of tight end, that's one way of going about it. And then Mario, I'll drop some splits here for you as far as where the money's coming in. This courtesy from our buddies over at WinBet. As far as the money line take on this game, 51% is on Tennessee of the tickets, but 53% of the handle or the money is coming in on Cincinnati. As far as the spread goes, 56% on Tennessee covering that 3.5, and 50% of the handle. So pretty split handle as far as the spread is concerned. 78% of the handle is on the over as well. So does that strike you in any way? I think it is a little bit surprising to me that the Bengals are getting that much of the money on the money line. But I think it also makes sense. I personally think that the Bengals win this one outright.
Sorry, what was the spread that you were seeing for those numbers?
Let's see. So for 3.5 point spread, yeah. And then the money line, 51% on Tennessee as far as the bets go, the betting volume, and then the money, 53% is on Cincinnati on the money line.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that stuff's always interesting. I'm guessing that's kind of within sort of like the margin of error you would conventionally apply here. Like it's kind of probably like a toss up as far as the opinions of the betting and the money weight placed on those various opinions. It seems like it's kind of tough to call this one as we would expect it to be from the spread at a glance, but I don't know. I feel like 3.5 is kind of like generous to the Titans, I suppose. And I'm almost surprised there's not more action on the Bengals as a result, because you would have figured people would, you know, with all those highlights lately, the big plays, all those touchdowns Burrow's throwing, I would have figured they would be like almost trendy Super Bowl picks in the AFC, you know.
I got a little bit of coin on the Bengals winning it all.
Yeah, see, I'm surprised that's not even like more popular, but maybe people just really respect the Tennessee playoff threat. In any case, I feel like, I don't know. I have trouble thinking this through, because I actually think both offenses can strike quickly. Like Tennessee is slow moving, but they can strike quickly to AJ Brown, maybe even to Julio Jones if he's on Eli Apple in single coverage. So as long as it's like a one score game, you can imagine the other team getting back into it quickly. I don't know. I don't know how to call this one. I'll just go with Tennessee, because I don't know. I do think the Cincinnati corners are pretty weak depth wise. Like Chidobe Awuzie is good, but I don't think he's good enough to slow down AJ Brown, and he might shadow AJ Brown. And if AJ Brown's going as he normally would, and Julio Jones is on Eli Apple, I kind of like Tennessee's ability to strike back, and I like their their game planning wiliness. Like I know Zach Taylor has largely redeemed himself this year just with the success that they've had, but I think it's more personnel driven than coaching driven. Whereas, you know, if coaching matters at all, maybe it matters more in a playoff situation like this. And, you know, certainly saw it matter with like Dallas against the 49ers. Like some teams just never will be prepared to play in the playoffs. Not that the Bengals are that, but I think Tennessee is always prepared for situations like these.
Yeah. The coaching facet of this one does make me nervous for Cincinnati. I think there is a pretty distinct advantage on the Tennessee side of things, as far as the coaching goes. But I think that the talent, the explosiveness, and the ability to generate a pass rush on the Cincinnati side of things. And, you know, I'm not going to draw too much on momentum or rest versus rust, that kind of thing. But I do feel like the Bengals really are one of the most dangerous teams that left in the playoffs. And you know, but I'm sure Tennessee fans, you know, they're not stoked that their reward for being the number one seed is playing this Bengals team the way that they're going right now.
That's true, but it definitely could be worse. I mean, as much as you don't want to play the Bengals, you probably would rather play them than the Bills or the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Or at least the, I don't know, whatever. It's all tough. But yeah, I think Tennessee, they're just kind of one of those dangerous one game teams to me. And I do think playoff experience matters. Like if the Bengals win last week and lose this game, it's still a very successful season for them. It's still a great trajectory that they're on. And a lot of times in games like this, playoff experience really is kind of what separates it.
You remember back in August when there's some of the most doomsday beat reporter chatter about the Cincinnati Bengals team, the worst practices they've ever seen. Jamar cannot catch the ball.
I mean, I think the biggest takeaway from that is like the defense was good and they've never practiced against a pass rush before. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Burrow getting healthier over the course of the year had to help. I assume, you know, to me, the dumber thing was kind of like the Chase dropping passes in the preseason thing. It was like, I understand that it's an event that happened, but like preseason doesn't matter, at least in the face of the kind of LSU production that he had. A few playoff plays doesn't matter. But yeah, their defense has been a lot better pass rush wise, especially than it has in, I don't know, forever. And that might have caused their training camp troubles whenever that viewing occurred.
They got some beasts there that they can definitely foul things up for the offense, make it a little bit tougher to get into that rhythm. Let's move on over. Saturday night game up in your neck of the woods, just a couple hours north of you at Lambeau Field. We got the Packers -6 going up against San Francisco, over under at 47 in that one. Weather going to be a factor again on the Saturday night game, just as it was a week ago in Buffalo. Pretty similar conditions, all things considered. Relatively light winds, but a brisk 9 degrees at kickoff with a wind chill of -4. Going to feel like -5, -6 for most of this game as the Packers play host to the 49ers. The Packers obviously have some postseason demons against the 49ers over the course of this last decade or so. What are your expectations going into this one?
Well, the 49ers are definitely tough. And if, you know, traditionally, if a team's can't throw as much, then that might be to the 49ers' benefit. If, you know, with Rodgers being the other quarterback, that definitely will be true here. But I don't know if there's much reason to think the cold will affect Rodgers that much. And I don't know if Garoppolo really can't get the ball moving through the air, if his shoulder thumb issue is actually a problem, then maybe the Green Bay run defense actually gets pretty good because they don't have to defend, you know, a certain downfield third of the field like they normally would. And maybe that just goes toward shooting some gap that the 49ers normally clear out. I don't really know, but I do think that the 49ers defense is against the pass is particularly vulnerable here. Like, there's a chance, of course, that Bosa and whoever else could do so well that they just, you know, screw up the Green Bay passing game by getting to Rodgers so fast. But those corners cannot cover very much, and not these receivers can they cover. So I think we might get something that looks a lot like with the first time these teams played, just maybe not as many deep passes. The 49ers corners only got past that Dallas offense because Dallas's offensive scheme was just incredibly stupid. Like those corners, it was exactly what I was worried about going into that game. And it was the exact same way that the Cardinals played the Dallas offense a couple weeks before that, where both teams are playing with guys who are practice squatters. Basically, Ambry Thomas isn't a practice squatter with the 49ers, but he was supposed to be like their cornerback 5 or 6 this year, not a starter. And Josh Norman got benched for Dante Johnson, who's like a special teams journeyman. It's pretty bleak. And so both the Cardinals and the 49ers, they cannot cover outside receivers right now. And yet teams in Dallas's case against both of them were not throwing to the outside receivers, even though those outside corners were lining up like 10, 12 yards downfield at the start of the snap. Matt LaFleur isn't stupid enough to do that. If they try to line up those corners 10, 12 yards, Rodgers would overrule them, even if he were. If they try to put those corners 10, 12 yards off the snap, Rodgers is just throwing it to the receiver until they stop doing that. And then when they stop doing that, they do the double move or the play action, whatever. If you just let the corners play as if it's 3rd and 20 every snap, which is what the Cowboys do and what like your Ravens do a lot of the time when Lamar Jackson is the quarterback, then yeah, those bum corners aren't going to get beat because they don't actually have to cover anybody. You actually have to cover these receivers. And if you don't, they're going to throw the ball to them. So I think that the San Francisco pass rush will all of a sudden look a lot less effective if they're trying to play off coverage against the Packers. And if they don't play off coverage against the Packers, then they probably just get beat for not being able to cover the receivers. So I see it going that general way. I think Rodgers needs to have just kind of a bad off day for no real reason. You know, sputtering drives and or turnovers that give the 49ers a short enough field that the fact that Garoppolo cannot do anything himself doesn't matter. But I do think that matters.
So, you know, looking at another example of a time where the Packers have gone against a sort of overmatched pass defense, I think back to that Baltimore game where they were just putting everybody that they could on Davante Adams, like doing absolutely everything. And it opened the door for a lot of those other receivers for Green Bay to make their mark in that particular game. Do you see something similar here where San Francisco just kind of allocates all these resources to just like not letting Davante Adams be the one that beats them? And then that opens the door for your interest for like an MVS or an Alan Lazard.
Yeah. So they almost have to try to sell out to stop Adams, right? And yet, they might not be able to do that. Like they might try to do that and fail, and then, like you said, B, even if they do succeed in that, at what cost? Like, what happens after that? And I do think that the cold lessens the chance of Marquez Valdes-Scantling being the answer. Like, they got to defend him. They can't just let that guy run free downfield just because it's cold as hell. But it's a little harder to complete that deep pass. Like, the ball's a little heavier. Valdes-Scantling's hands are bad enough. But the one guy that I do think can hurt the 49ers in pretty much all parts of the field is Lazard. And especially if they're getting Lazard against like Kaywan Williams in the slot, Ambry Thomas isn't very big either. I think Lazard is just plain good, and he can line up all over the place. They can use him almost as like a tight end at times too. So if they successfully sell out to stop Davante Adams, I still think there's a pretty good chance that LaFleur in that case would just get Lazard on whoever he wanted. And as long as it's not like Fred Warner, then the defender in question, like maybe Warner or Jimmy Reed, as long as it's not those two, then whoever is on Lazard probably isn't suited to covering him, in my opinion. So I think Lazard is there. Aaron Jones, you got to worry about showing up somehow.
I feel like we're going to have a pretty low roster percentage on him. Maybe it's anecdotal, but I think that when you write the AJ Dillon fanfic of playing a January playoff game at Lambeau Field where the wind chill's under zero, you just picture that, you know, freight train of 6 foot, 240 pounds, just wearing out a defense. I think a lot of people are going to kind of gravitate, myself included, are going to gravitate towards AJ Dillon, and it might result in Jones maybe being a little bit underserved as far as the roster percentage goes.
I mean, that's definitely a way it could go. And, you know, especially if Green Bay has a lead, then you like the chances of Dillon getting on the field more. I think the 49ers run defense shows up, though, and I think the 49ers run defense is good enough that, especially early in the game, especially if they don't have a lead, the Packers might want to go with the more explosive player and you know, save Dillon for the reps that are like beneath Aaron Jones, you know, like when it's time to run into the teeth of the defense, put AJ Dillon in, and when it's time to get a first down, put Aaron Jones in, touchdown, first down, Aaron Jones. Give him the ball. He had 19 carries against the 49ers back in week 3 when they played, only had 82 yards, but he had a touchdown, and it's interesting that they worked him to that extent in that game. You know, it's like it was a tough defense that they played. The 49ers played that game, and yet the Packers gave Jones some volume. So I like Aaron Jones as a player. I don't expect him to do a whole lot as a pass catcher. You'd think Warner pays a lot of attention to Jones when they start moving Jones around and start threatening to throw Jones that ball. Maybe most games that goes to Jones, maybe in this one it has to go to Lazard because Warner is on Jones. I don't really know, but you're right. The ownership should be pretty low because I think most people have a lot of respect for the 49ers run defense too, for good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. So that does kind of make me in a roundabout way a little bit curious about throwing Jones into a lineup, probably not doing the double backfield stack, however. And then on the San Francisco side, you know, Kittle, the production's been kind of like up and down. Is this a game where they kind of dust him off and get him a little bit more involved, just under the expectation that Debo Samuel's going to be taking so much attention of this Packers defense?
Yeah, and the price is really nice too, $5,300. It's like he doesn't even really need to do, you know, like Kittle's a guy that we often see at $6,500 plus, like Kelsey's number on the slate. So $5,300, that at once might make him a bit chalky. You know, I guess Dawson Knox being as hot as he is. Yeah, I mean, $5,300, if Kittle's not like 25%+ owned, I actually like that quite a bit. And those safeties, Darnell Savage, Adrian Amos, they do a good job covering, but they largely cover downfield. They're not really like rovers. They're more like both free safeties, like they're two center fielders. So I think Kittle could have a pretty good matchup here. I don't think there's anything in the front seven that's concerning for him. He had a big game the first time, you know, 9 targets or whatever it was. So yeah, I actually like Kittle a lot. I think there's a pretty good case to make for him as the top tight end on the slate.
So with that in mind, do you think it's the week to fade Debo? I mean, it always makes you feel nervous to fade a guy like that.
No, I wouldn't say fade him exactly. I mean, you can just prefer other receivers, you know, but don't make your 49ers related picks on the assumption that like there's some answer to Debo Samuel out there, because I don't think there really is.
No, he's too versatile. He's too just mean with the ball in his hands. So do you like his setup here? And, you know, figure he's going to get into that backfield mix once again as well. So, Mario, looking at the betting for this game, 71% of the bets are coming in on Green Bay money line, 60% of the handle, however. So 10% difference, Niners carrying 40% of the betting handle in this game on the money line. 71% of the money is on Green Bay to cover, and they are also getting 87% of the handle. So as far as the spread goes, Green Bay is kind of dominating that one, and the over is getting 60% of the tickets, but the under getting 63%. So kind of a split thinking as far as the money coming in on the total going to the under versus the betting volume going towards the over.
Yeah, that's hard to keep track of and sort through. It's almost like some of the people might be like using a hedge between the two bets, like putting a different amounts on both things, depending on, like, I assume what the payout terms are. I got to go with Green Bay. I just think like Jimmy Garoppolo played at Northern Illinois. It's not like the cold is something that he doesn't know about, but there's just something about Rodgers there. And I think that the Packers are just the better team overall. Like, I think they would project as the winner in a neutral site in addition to the cold. If Garoppolo's thumb and shoulder are actually limited, then that's maybe the best reason to fade Samuel if you're going to see it that way. Because, like, yeah, maybe if Samuel has a bad game, I don't see how the 49ers cover, you know, or how they cover and certainly not win.
Right. Yeah, they're just not going to be competitive if Debo isn't a major factor in this one. I tend to agree with you. I think that the Packers are the best team in the NFL. I say this as someone who hasn't had the Wisconsin tap water in months, but I still am just a sheer believer in Rodgers, the way that he's playing, and the rest of this roster has really come together nicely. Love the coaching. I think this is a slam dunk. I like the Packers to win. I like them to cover. I think they win this game by a touchdown, possibly more, even in light of their recent postseason failings. I think this is a bit of a different team this time around. Before we get on over to our next game, we got a message from our friends over at Blue Wire.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
And we also have a message from our friends over at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 7 states. That's Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. While rapidly expanding at WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WynnBET, WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. All right, Mario, on to Sunday. We got the Rams going across the country to face the Buccaneers. Rams obviously took care of business Monday night. I think a lot of that had to do with the Cardinals playing their D-minus game, maybe their F game, just an awful game from Arizona. Not to take anything totally away from the Rams, but
you can take most of it from the Cardinals instead. They blew it. They're idiots.
Yeah. Okay. That's absolutely true. Let's see. As far as the Bucs are concerned, they were able to kind of overwhelm the Eagles pretty easily, I felt like. And you know, maybe Philadelphia now has to ask itself some existential questions when it comes to how they're going to approach that this offseason with Jalen Hurts, with the quarterbacks, with the draft kind of loadout that they have with all those early round selections. But your thoughts here when it comes to the Bucs playing at home, 2.5-point favorites against this Rams team?
Well, we got the Tristan Wirfs thing, which we got to keep an eye on, I guess, because I don't know who the right tackle is, but he's not as good. The backup right tackle, I don't know who that is, but can't be anywhere near as good as Wirfs. And don't know what today's update was, but not practicing Wednesday, was in a boot shortly beforehand. It's also worth keeping an eye on Cyril Grayson. I don't know if he's going to be able to play. He wasn't practicing Wednesday, but he's a pretty convincing track kind of conversion guy that they got. And Whitworth, I guess, for the Rams, bears monitoring too. Taylor Rapp, I don't know if he's going to be back. He's a 3-down safety for them. So there's a few things to keep an eye on there. Wirf's probably the biggest one, even with Whitworth being pretty close himself. Did you happen to see, John, have you heard, are the Rams already in Tampa? Like, are they practicing this week there, or are they
that's a good question. It would certainly behoove them to do that. I mean, they're already on the short week as it is, having played on Monday. I think it would make all the sense in the world to get that travel arrangement set up ahead of time. You know, if they weren't there yesterday, maybe getting there today, Thursday, would be the optimal move to kind of mitigate the impact of going across the country, because, you know, theoretically this would be that proverbial body clock game for the Rams.
Yeah. And aside from that, though, I mean, this is tough to think through for me, because I don't really expect the Buccaneers to be able to run. I just don't think they really have the personnel to do it. And Brady without Godwin is a lot different. Obviously, Godwin and Antonio Brown, of course. Jalen Ramsey might be able to lock up Mike Evans pretty good. I don't know if they would be able to stop Gronk if that happened, but stopping or containing even one of those two might be enough for the Rams to put a lot of heat on the Buccaneers. And Ramsey basically doesn't lose. So even if he doesn't truly shut down Evans, it's hard to see Evans doing what he wants to exactly. And those other receivers, I mean, I do think Dante Dion is insanely out of place as a cornerback for the Rams, who plays basically a 3-down role. He can't cover anybody that will run against him. Like if he stops a play that goes his way, it's just because he was like sitting in some zone and just hopped on the ball, something like that. Cause he's like 160 and runs a 4.6. He can't cover NFL receivers.
Respect.
Yeah. I mean, that's an every man, you know,
I lunch pail guy.
Yeah, my God. It's like the beer truck driver, Michael Lewis, but it's like, he's not even fast this time. He's just like not even a good NFL athlete. But anyway, those guys, Darius Williams is good. It's the other short corner, Dion, who can't cover. So we'll see. They got to minimize Dion's exposure somehow. And David Long, the guy who had the turnover last week, normally he's just kind of a bum. So the Rams
need to be careful. Did you notice anything out of Weddle last week?
I didn't. Did you?
That's probably good if you're
It's wet. Probably good, yeah. It could have been noticeable in a really bad way, and I didn't notice him. So that's interesting. Also, the Cardinals just didn't show up, so whatever.
Nope. Awful.
But yeah, so I don't want to bet against Tom. I mean, quite the contrary. I think at a, what is this price here? 6,800, he might be kind of chalky, and probably for good reason, because he's going to have his own, you know, totally unique game plan here. Like, whatever they're going to show the Rams, they might not have put on tape all year. There's a reason he's so uniquely dangerous in these settings. But I think Stafford almost has to blow it on the other side for the Rams to not have at least a really good shot at like coming down to the last drive or something. Cause Carlton Davis, I imagine, is going to have to shadow Odell Beckham. Cause normally Carlton Davis shadows the number one receiver, but normally the number one receiver is not a slot receiver like Cooper Kupp. So I don't know if Davis is going to follow Kupp to the slot. If he does, Kupp probably beats him. Sean Murphy Bunting probably gets beat by Kupp in the slot most of the time. I don't know if there's some kind of game planning wrinkle the Buccaneers can come up with to stop that. But if Carlton Davis is on Odell Beckham, and if they try to play like one-on-one press man coverage against Odell Beckham, I bet Beckham can dust Carlton Davis. And I think Davis is a good corner, but I think Beckham is too explosive to leave on one-on-one. And yet I don't know how they do anything else. Like you can't just let Kupp catch 15 passes on you. You have to try to stop Kupp somehow. So I feel like Stafford should have opportunities to hit this defense deep. Probably not against Jamel Dean, though. Like, Jamel Dean's got the sideline locked up. I guess I got to go with the Buccaneers just because I don't expect Brady to ever blow a game, and Stafford, I think, is pretty good at it.
Yeah, he is. And like the, you know, they played earlier this season, but I feel like the Rams, you know, they started so hot, but they've been really Jekyll and Hyde for really the better part of the latter half of the season. Bucks are nasty at home. I mean, I think they were 6-2 against the spread at home during the regular season, obviously covered last weekend. So, yeah, I'm with you. I just have a hard time betting against Brady this time of year. This is still a good Bucks team, even without Brown and Godwin.
If Wirfs is out, that might make me a little spooked. Like, I might have to bail on the spread at least.
Okay. All right. That definitely makes sense. It's not a huge spread, though, which is kind of interesting to me. I would have thought that, you know, the Bucks would have been closer to 4-point favorites, but then I'm seeing 2.5. So,
yeah, that is
That's skinny. Yeah. And here's some interesting money line wrinkles here for you. So 59% of the bets are on the Rams to win this one, and 68% of the money also on the Rams to win this one.
Wow.
59% of the tickets are on Tampa to cover this. 52% of the handle on the Bucks as well. Then 70% of the bets, 62% of the handle are both on the over, which checks in at 48.5. I'm surprised by the amount of volume being decidedly on the Rams. Maybe it's just like a good value, just like the number. I think maybe that's where people are coming from.
It might be like Wirfs too, because I guess Brady got hit a good amount by that Eagles defense, and you know, I don't personally think Leonard Floyd is that good of an edge rusher, but Von Miller might be. he's a totally good strong side, you know, kind of run stopper guy. But yeah, I don't know. I got to go with Tampa just because McVay has to have an ace up his sleeve. You know, that's what he needs very specifically, because if he hasn't been saving that ace all this time, then the Rams are just got problems that they're never going to solve. You know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Rams money line right now, +130 over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. So one of the narrower underdog money lines on the board, the Niners, the heaviest underdogs at +220. Any other like DFS considerations from this one before we move on? How are you approaching this one? You know, given that the totals checks in at 48.5.
I actually think it's best for the Rams if the Buccaneers try to shadow Beckham with Carlton Davis, because I think Jamel Dean is as good of a counter to the explosiveness that Beckham has. And Dean just kind of like shuts down the sideline. Even if he can't really go anywhere else, he shuts down that part of the field, and Beckham has to mostly run in that part of the field. But Davis is he's like a 4.5, 3.40 guy. He's bigger. He's more grabby, more like a James Bradbury almost. And James Bradbury isn't a track guy. So I think that the Buccaneers could kind of make it harder on themselves and really hurt themselves by trying to cover Beckham with Davis. But if they don't, I don't know what other than Kupp really gets going reliably for the Rams. So I guess I will say I like Kupp at 8,600 more than Davante Adams at 8,500 just for the weather reasons. But beyond that, I guess I don't really have any thoughts. Don't really like the run games in either case.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm not going to chase Akers. I still think that, you know, that's still a really stout run defense for the most part in Tampa Bay. So, yeah, staying away from that. I'm definitely a little bit more curious on getting a lineup with the Rams pass catchers after our discussion there. Let's move on over. We got the last game of the weekend. Should be a good one, folks. We got the Kansas City Chiefs checking in as 2.5-point favorites against the Buffalo Bills. Weather not really expected to be much of an impact here. 42 degrees at kick, mostly clear. I don't think the wind's supposed to be all that bad. Buffalo is 8-3 against the spread on the road this year. Obviously, had that one kind of statement win over the Chiefs with that big rain delay in it, if I remember correctly, earlier in the season when they kind of announced their arrival.
That was a slot ball game. That was a real game.
It was a little bit of a bizarre game, no doubt. As far as the betting splits are concerned, 61% of the bets on the money line are for Buffalo, but 55.7% of the handle, so the money coming in on the money line bets, is coming in on Kansas City. I felt strongly about taking the Buffalo money line coming into this, but seeing the vault, like the public be kind of on that as well, is kind of making me reconsider and maybe thinking Chiefs money line would be the way to go here.
So this is a tough one for me because I actually think the Chiefs offense is pretty much busted. I think they lost something and they're not going to get it back this year because they need basically a run game that can hammer the defense and make it pay for sitting back as deep as it does against the speed and you know, the Kelce threat and the seam. So I don't think that this Buffalo defense is necessarily vulnerable to the Kansas City offense. I think the Bills would have to do some dumb things that I don't especially expect of them to make this Kansas City offense look like it has against, you know, the Raiders this year or the Steelers this year. The Steelers just have bad personnel. There's only so much they could do. Mm-hmm. So I think Buffalo is still dangerous defense-wise for Mahomes, but I also think that it would be a mistake to think that the Bills are fundamentally different than they were earlier this year or last year in any positive sense. Last year, their offense was better, point blank, and I think a lot of people are looking at that Patriots game last week, the way that the Patriots just got totally wrecked, and thinking like, oh man, now the Bills are on a new level. The Patriots did that wrong. The Patriots played them as stupidly as they possibly could have. They tried to play man coverage against Josh Allen, which I know Belichick has some reason in his head as to why he keeps trying to do this, even though it keeps blowing up in his face. But you can't play man coverage against the Bills. You need to play zone defense as much as possible for two reasons. One is that you can't press covers to Stephon Diggs. No one can do it. If you try, you'll just, even if you double team him, you'll just kind of like fail at it and you'll leave yourself weaker at every other rep as a result. But the other reason, and maybe even the biggest one, is you need to keep eyes on Josh Allen as a runner. And if you're playing man coverage and you're turning and running off the line of scrimmage, then you're not looking at him. And he's running, and you're still running away from him downfield instead of turning around to pursue him and shut down the run. So you see how Kyler Murray couldn't get anything going against the Rams last week. Like, they were just sitting in basic zone coverages, just keeping eyes on him. It's like, keep an eye on him, he won't run. And if he doesn't run, he can't do anything. Now, Allen can do more because he doesn't have a moron for a coach and he's got better players around him and he's arguably better himself even. But the danger of them falling off in a way that no one's projecting is definitely there because I don't think the Chiefs are going to try that. I think Spagnuolo has done a pretty good job lately. I don't want to say he's just like good exactly. And certainly the Kansas City run defense especially has some weak spots. Sorensen's a weak spot in the passing game, but I think they're going to play a fundamental, like sooner the inverse of what the Patriots did. Like, they're going to do a lot of ostensible disguised coverages and they'll cover parts of the field and not individual players. So
do you remember if they tried any wrinkles along that end the first time?
Well, the first time Allen didn't have a good game as a passer, he just ran around a bunch and guys couldn't tackle him. So that was, I think, maybe when Charvarius Ward was still out, too. I can't remember. But the Chiefs defense got quite a bit better in the second half, and getting healthier at corner might have been a part of that. But I mean, Allen played in Arrowhead last year, too, in the playoffs, and he didn't have a very good game. It was fine, but he was 28 of 48 for 287 yards and two touchdowns.
Ran for Chris 88. Jones did not play in the first game, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about how Chris Jones was hurt, too. I think this is a really tough game for both teams. I think it's, you know, both teams are very dangerous to the other one, but especially if the Chiefs just, if you make Josh Allen think after the snap, that's when he starts doing things that don't really make sense. Like when he knows before the snap where everyone's going, it's really easy because he can just, you know, stress some part of the field where he knows no one's going to be. And either he can throw it farther and faster to that spot, or he can run to that spot better than the defense had in mind. But if you make him figure everything out after the snap, it's like it's like loading a trebuchet sometimes when he throws the ball. And if you have to do it, if you have to load a crossbow, load a trebuchet when there's people rushing you, it's a lot different than like already having it locked, loaded, knowing where you want to go with the ball. So if the Chiefs have a prayer, it's they have to make Allen think after the snap and make him, you know, think wrong.
Right. That's always a huge key. And then, you know, there is kind of the X factor where the routes aren't there for Allen necessarily, but he just makes a play.
Yeah, if he does. So I don't think he will really make a play as a passer unless the defense is getting whooped like they were last week. And that's not like bashing Allen. I just think he was making those throws because the defense was getting that beat. I don't think it was just like he was doing otherworldly things. I think
that was like a historic offensive performance.
Oh, it was a beatdown. Like the
they didn't punt.
The Patriots did literally everything they would have wished. If the Bills could have wrote a wish list about what to do, short of just like not putting any players on the field, it would have been exactly what the Patriots did. And I think the Chiefs don't do that as a matter of, you know, general policy. Like they don't play man coverage like that. They do disguise coverages. They do varied sub package type deals. Whereas with the Patriots, it was just like, this guy's on this guy because he's right in his face, right at the line of scrimmage. And we know he's not going to drop back in his own coverage because there's, you know, this guy's over here. This guy's running this route over here. We can sell the protection sliding this way. I go over here. This guy's getting open in 2 seconds every time. Like every time it happened, it was like clockwork. So Allen can still be dangerous, obviously, and he's better in Arrowhead. Him and Herbert, guys like that, are way better in Arrowhead than like weak pop gun arm passers. But it's still not that easy of a place to play. And if he can only really get going as a runner, by the way, even if Allen has a bad game as a passer, he probably will have a good game as a runner. It's just the issue is that probably isn't enough with the Bills roster. Like there is Allen needs to do a little more, I think, than Mahomes does to win this game. But you know, maybe that's the wrong way to see it.
Yeah, no, I think it will be much tougher for Allen this time around. Yeah, that's going to be a fascinating matchup to see if Buffalo is able to kind of maybe replicate in some way what they were able to do a weekend ago. But again, like you said, a much different game plan likely coming from the Kansas City side of things. As far as the Kansas City offense, you mentioned earlier that they might have some fatal flaws that they don't get fixed until next season. What does that mean for Sunday?
So I guess I should say, I don't know if the Bills are that well suited to run that particular defense because Poyer and Hyde are both good safeties. They're both former corners. Coverage is definitely their strong suit, but they're also both slow. Like they're bad athletes, even for safeties, even though they're cornerback sized both. So I don't know how good they are suited to play like the real two high, like dual center fielders. I don't know if that's really their game as much as dual robbers, like playing robber, like in the middle of the field and 10 yards, 15 yards under, something like that is where Poyer and Hyde are really tough because they just show up in places, you know, covering tight ends. They just appear when the slot receiver is getting a target. You don't really see so many plays with Hyde running the length of the field, Poyer running the length of the field, you know, going for a jump ball. Those plays don't really happen. So maybe they can do that. Maybe they haven't done it because they just haven't needed to. And maybe the Chiefs are the reason they have to do it and they do it well. But in the meantime, those corners cannot run with the Chiefs receivers at all. And it's not just Tyreek Hill. Like Mecole Hardman can run right past all these corners. Byron Pringle can run right past these corners. If they're trying to play man coverage and they're not getting to Mahomes and they're not doing the too high in a disciplined, really successful way, those corners can get burned. It can strike anywhere from the field kind of danger. They really need to be worried about getting beat every play.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Yeah, there's so much speed on and athleticism when it comes to that Kansas City group of pass catchers that, you know, you take your eye off of one of them and you know, they're streaking down the sideline. Looking at that Chiefs backfield, it's obviously been one of the trickier ones to sort out this season amid all the injuries and just sort of unappealing for the most part options. Jerick McKinnon helped me win $8 last week, though, so...
Nice.
Am I going back to that well?
Well, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is supposed to play this week, and I know that, you know, Darrell Williams and Jerick McKinnon having good fantasy days and Edwards-Helaire being hurt all the time has led a lot of people to say, like, oh, they're better than him now. They're not. If they are better than him, then Kansas City's in trouble, because I think Edwards-Helaire is still hurt, if that's the case. I don't think the run defense for Buffalo is that good. Like, it's good, but the numbers say that it's great, and I don't think it's great. So I think there's a way for the Chiefs to hurt the Bills in the ground game, especially if the Bills really are just selling out deep and not defending the underneath and intermediate the way that they normally do. So I do trust Andy Reid to come up with a pretty good game plan here. Like, as much as I think there's something to criticize with him and how they ended up in that place they did, where they can't beat anybody who runs like a two high. Like, I don't think it needed to be that hard on them, but I also would be pretty surprised if he showed up here just like, you know, at a loss for ideas. Like, he's had enough time. I think it's a lot more likely that he just kind of like took too long to fix it than never fixes it. And as much as I do think personnel is the main thing that can change it, that there are certain other things that they could just do differently that, you know, wrongly or right or wrong, I kind of expect Reed to be more competent than incompetent with the game plan.
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly earned that benefit of the doubt. It's going to be tough to beat the Chiefs, let alone in Arrowhead, but I think the Bills do it. I know I was just waffling on that a little bit once we got to this.
I do not want to pick a side on this one. I don't feel strongly about it. There's so many conditions that I have to place, you know, and it's you don't actually get to stipulate conditions.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's tricky. So I guess we'll end it with our predictions as far who wins, who's going to be playing in the conference championships next weekend. I will start. I think on the AFC, we see two road upsets. I think we see the Bengals and the Bills both win on Saturday and Sunday, setting up an AFC championship game in Orchard Park. That would be electric. And then on the other side, I like the home chalk. I do think that the Packers are able to take care of business. And then I think that the Buccaneers also, despite those concerns that you raised with the pass defense, I'll just side with Tom Brady and assume that it's going to be a rematch of last year's NFC championship a week from now.
Yeah, I'll go with all favorites. Just saying the one upset that I prefer over the other three, I guess, is the Rams, but I will take all favorites.
Probably not a bad way of approaching it, Mario. And then one last thing, a commenter Gary wants to know what our best props are for the weekend. I haven't personally looked into them just yet, but we do run three sportsbook articles. They are for free, no paywall. We run those on Saturday to kind of get the most updated odds and numbers for those. So Kevin Payne writes a DraftKings sportsbook article. Walter Hand does the win bet. And Eric Tim does the FanDuel sportsbook. So we got tons of prop coverage.
I probably like a Lazard one, if I must name one. I probably like Lazard.
Yeah, drop one in there. Sprinkle it in. Yeah, Lazard. Keep an eye on his reception yardage or anytime touchdown.
Let's say actually any category, but especially touchdown or receptions.
Love those calls. All right, that's going to wrap things up for us here on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Once again, brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.